Welcome to the Innovation in Higher Education podcast, where we share the diverse views and perspectives of experts in higher education, innovation, technology, and entrepreneurship from all around the world on topics related to the future of higher education and the future of work in an engaging, fresh, friendly, and very human format. Let's get started.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of the Innovation in Higher Education podcast. My name is Viviana Rojas. I will be your host for today. Today, we have a very special guest. We are here with Marte Solheim. I hope I pronounced that right. That was a bit challenging. She is the head of Stavanger Center for Innovation Research and also a professor in the same university. And today we're going to talk about a very important topic, especially for international students and especially for countries that have strong policies for international students regarding education, of course. Today, we're going to talk about this policy proposal coming from the Norwegian government about establishing tuition fees for international students in Norwegian universities. This is a proposal that is still on the back, seeing if it's approved or not, but that it can have very strong impacts in the whole quality and in the whole functioning of the Norwegian education system as it is now. So today, Marte has agreed to come here with us to talk about this topic, to discuss about this topic. And just let's greet her. How are you, Marte? Thanks for being here.
Hi, how are you? Thank you so much for inviting me to discuss this very timely and important topic, as we see it, at least from the Norwegian standpoint. So I'm very happy to be here with you today, Viviana.
Great. As I already mentioned in the introduction, we wanted to discuss about this policy proposal for establishing tuition fees for international students in Norwegian University. I know you wrote an op-ed about this topic, and you mentioned five critical, for sure there are more points, but you mentioned five critical points in which this policy, if approved, would affect the higher education system in Norway. So maybe can you talk about that? Can you tell us about it?
I can just also mention that I've recently taken over as the deputy lead of the Young Academy in Norway. Mm-hmm. So we also through that, we wrote four of the members from this Young Academy. We wrote an op-ed, as you mentioned, with Haley, Ike, Nils Halvar, and me. We wrote about this proposal, and we highlighted, as you said, sort of five overarching things that we believe are sort of the consequences of this proposal. And the first one is that we believe that it would be very harmful for Norwegian research, because we see our master's students as an important part of this sort of pioneering dynamic research environments. And also because our international master's students, they work as scientific sort of assistants and also student assistants. And we also see that they contribute to our research environments in a very good way, and far beyond being a student, because we also see that some of them contribute to research and some of them also are recruited into research positions. And also, we also see that some of them, you know, they continue their career. So the first step is that they go through as international candidates in our research environment, and then they go on being international with PhD students and whatnot. So we believe that it's desirable that the Norwegian system would educate more international master students, not fewer. And also because we believe that they could contribute. And I think for me also, it's particularly important because my research area is innovation studies, as you mentioned, but I've also, I mean, the core pillar of what I've done over the last 10 years or so has been about diversity and innovation, and seeing how innovation takes place when a variety of knowledge intersects. And for that also, we can see that having these different perspectives and having the different worldviews that international students bring with them is very important, not only for them coming in as students, but also in terms of shaping the research agenda for the future. And I think another important point there is that, of course, it's not only people from the rich countries or elites that become good researchers. So it's therefore also important to think about not introducing more financial obstacles that would make it difficult for research talent from different countries to come to Norway. So that was sort of basically the first sort of point about being harmful for Norwegian research. And then do you want me to continue to talk about some more?
I would like to continue, but I would like to make a small comment, and then we can build on this. So you mentioned something, and we were talking also about this in the backstage of the interview. We were talking about innovation, right? Like innovation in higher education systems, and how innovation is really, and what does innovation really mean, right? And you mentioned something that is very, very, very much true, that innovation requires diversity of perspectives. Right. And I think and you would agree with me, that the best way of bringing innovation into research is to bring researchers from different parts of the world. Right. And the access to education and the access of quality education is not something that is given in every country. As we were mentioning before, people from Norway are as well privileged people because they can access to high quality education for basically free. Right? This is not something that happens to another part of the world. And I think an important action towards promoting innovation and towards promoting collaboration and better research, well, that translates to better research, better companies, better everything, is to establish these possibilities of access to quality education. And this policy of no tuition fees for international students in Norway was one thing that would definitely enhance and make attractive for international students the possibility of going to Norway, right? And as well, this helps to diminish inequalities in a way, somehow. So I think from what you just said, that if there is something adjacent that this policy might be harmful for, is definitely the innovation capacity of Norwegian research centers, of Norwegian companies, because we were talking as well about how the employers value international talent in Norway, right? So there are many aspects to be considered upon making this policy work, right? So
yeah, absolutely. And I think that's also something that I've seen throughout my research as well, looking at foreign-born workers in Norway. We've seen that they facilitate international connections. So the companies in Norway with particularly highly educated foreign-born workers are also collaborating with a broader set of international partners, which in turn, I mean, when having these international collaborations, is also fostering radical product innovation in Norwegian companies. That meaning that these innovations are not only new to the firm, but it's new to the world market. So we've already established some of these connections throughout my research, where we've seen these linkages with having international workers. And part of this is because they don't necessarily break ties with their homelands, but they continue, and they also have a lot of knowledge that Norwegian companies can tap into. So that is part of the sort of diversity imperative that you could have, benefiting from having different perspectives, but also having different social and professional networks. That is important. But I think also another very important point is these global megatrends that we are witnessing now, right? So we have geopolitical tensions, we have the climate crisis that also needs to be tackled through
and the aging
different
population,
perspectives.
Which is especially true in Europe, right? The aging of the workforce, which is especially true in Europe. I was
Absolutely.
Looking at some graphs the other day on like how many years people will retire in each country, and really the European countries are there in the edge, while people from other continents are younger, let's say this in a way, you know, like we have a higher birth rate.
And that is also one of the megatrends that has been sort of established that will shape our lives in the next 20 years. And that has consequences, as you mentioned, with the workforce, yes, but it also has consequences in terms of healthcare and healthcare technologies. And so there's a lot of innovation potential also in those areas, right? And also because some other of the other mega trends relates to digitalization and robotization and sort of what are we going to do. And what we can also see is that in order to tackle some of these global trends, like the geopolitical tensions, climate crisis, COVID-19 also demonstrated that we need to tackle it from different perspectives and different fields, and that it requires also sort of complex problem solving. And from past research, we also know that having a diversity of perspectives and a diverse workforce also facilitate being able to tackle complex problem solving. And I think that's also interesting because if you look at the World Economic Forum, mm-hmm. Then you see that the top 10 skills for the future is really tapping into problem solving. So that is something that we also see that we need to wrestle with in the years to come.
Yes, definitely. Like problem solving and adaptability, I think, are the two main mm-hmm. skills that will be sought after by every organization in the future.
Yeah, the flexibility and being able to be creative, taking initiative, innovation, and then also this sort of problem solving is really what we're looking at here.
You think, you know what, like I had the opportunity to study in a master program funded by the European Union, actually, but where we were 20 students, 21 students around from 18 different nationalities. And I think besides the knowledge and the theoretical knowledge and the research and everything that I gained in the program, what I learned most was this adaptability skills, and like opening my mind to different cultures, to different religions, to different points of view, different politics. Nothing has taught me better how to have an open mind and how to be adaptable and flexible than being in this super international cohort of students. So I definitely agree with you that this is something like internationalization and being like promoting the internationalization of education is one of the key factors to actually develop these skills in Norwegian students.
I totally agree with you. And that's also my experience, because when I was 16, 17 years old, I left Norway to go to Wales, and I did my high school in at United World College of the Atlantic in Wales. Uh-huh. And it was an international school with 350 students from 90 different nationalities. And we stayed together for 2 years, right? And mm-hmm. that having that experience at a very young age and very sort of formative years of my life was also mm-hmm. something that I believe has sort of shaped also my research agenda to this day, but it has also taught me a lot, as it did with you, right? And in terms of adaptability.
And it's something you don't learn in theory, but you have to go with it, you know? You are living it, you are experiencing it, you are making friendships, like lifelong friendships with people that are completely, that you otherwise would have never met. And I think this is something that definitely has to keep going and has to be enhanced by and promoted by governments, by education ministers, instead of, you know, going backwards.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess we both had these experiences that I think tap into the second point that we also raised in the op-ed that we've discussed previously, which is about the loss of quality in higher education should this proposal be introduced, because it is specifically about this exchange of knowledge and ideas that we discussed, that you experienced when you did your master's, mm-hmm. and I also at my high school. Because we see that that benefits the institutions. I mean, having these international students bringing in their perspectives benefits the institutions, but also their fellow Norwegian students, mm-hmm. Which is something that we saw became quite apparent when I participated in a demonstration here in Stavanger against this proposal. There were a lot of Norwegian students talking about everything that they had gained from being part of such an international program during their master's. So this is also something that we see is important for our further development of our studies here in Stavanger.
Yeah. And talking about international students, what are the responses or what are the reactions of international students that you have been able to see about this policy?
Yeah, what I think it's been really good from my university side, at least, is that they have gathered a lot of like overviews and narratives about some of our previous students that have gone into work in the industry here in Norway. So either that they worked in the industry in Norway, some of have returned to their home countries, or some are now in a third nation with very great jobs, and they're contributing to the society. So that is one part of it. And the other one is starting to receive also emails from and contacts from prospective students that are worried about what this would entail and in terms of their planning for application next year. So I think it's like a bit like multifaceted, because we could also on the one hand see the businesses here benefiting and how we actually need a lot of competence in order to, for example, deal with the green restructuring. Yes. And how some of our international students in our innovation program have are in those positions at the moment. So I think that's part of the story, but also the prospective students that are wondering what will happen.
And what are the responses of university managers, university leaders about this policy? Have you had the opportunity to talk with your colleagues, peers, maybe not from your same university, but from other universities?
Yeah, so through this, the Young Academy in Norway, which is also sort of a network and a meeting place for young academics, and we're around 40-something members from different universities. So we were the ones behind writing also this op-ed, and have also published that on our websites, the Young Academy of Norway. So this is something that we can see that is not just uniquely something that I've invested time in, and and something that is of concern of many of my colleagues from different universities in Norway. And and I think it has raised a lot of discussion also in terms of what will this mean for us. We've been through a pandemic now that also had a lot of consequences on universities, and now this proposal, what it will it entail, how will it look like for in the future, like we will have to think differently about our recruitment strategies, like looking at some of our neighboring countries also that have introduced tuition fees. So having to target it different types of students from different countries than what we've done in the past, where it's been very open that students apply and they come here, it's been for free. So I think that has sort of shaken a lot of also in terms of how we will be able to deal with it moving forward, in terms of recruitment particularly.
Yeah. What is the percentage that right now, like as a standard university, Norwegian universities have from international students? Have you any idea of that? Do you have any idea of that?
I'm not completely sure, to be honest, but I know that there's a lot of differences in terms of of course some programs are more internationally oriented than others. Yes. And there are some that are only in Norwegian, but I would say so I don't know the average in, but it's quite a lot, particularly in some of our technical fields here at the university where I'm at, for example. And for the profile that we have in innovation here, it's been around typically around 60-70% international students, and most of them actually come from the countries that now will be
that we'll have to pay.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I think one thing that we can take out from this podcast is that
yes,
innovation in Norway will sure be affected by this policy if it goes on. What are other points or critical? What are other points that you touched in your op-ed? You just mentioned three. We can continue.
Yeah, so I think that what you just said now about like the percentage of students, but I think something that we touch upon is that we argue that it would be little or no financial gain, because we also argue that it would need to look at like how many students do we have from international from other countries, and where do they end up, and how do they contribute to the Norwegian society after they finish their studies. So that is also part of what we touch upon here, right? So so what happened to them, and they go on into jobs here in Norway, for example, paying taxes. So we believe that there's a lot more to be put into that equation that maybe what has been done at the current point, but also that we think that, and I think that's very crucial, that the difficult and uncertain times that we are faced with now must be met with very long-term and strategic plans, and not sort of this sort of very short-term ideas of what is being proposed here, because we believe that it's very uncertain what kind of financial benefits this introduction of the school fees will have. So we believe that you should do a thorough investigation into the advantages and the disadvantages of introducing such a scheme, right? Or that you would have to introduce these tuition fees. So we would have a better grounds to know what does it actually entail in overarchingly, like what does it mean? So we believe that would be, because it also has, I mean, collecting these tuition fees would also introduce a very bureaucratic systems. So which would also entail new costs, right? So, and at the same time, there will probably be fewer students. So there's also something to think about. But also something else that we touch upon in our op-ed is about justice and solidarity. So it's about how both solidarity and education are very important social democratic principles. Mm-hmm. So, and this is something that the current government is emphasizing time and time again. So we think that solidarity should be embraced more broadly than just the borders of the EEA area. And especially now, because what we also discussed a little bit, this global, the major global challenges, we think that research and collaboration and education across borders is something that we also see as a particularly becoming increasingly important. So we believe that higher education should be accessible to everyone. And we think that, I mean, the bottom line is that we believe that the Norwegian research and higher education will be significantly weakened if we do not retain this free principle regardless of nationality. And that brings into sort of the justice and solidarity perspective. But for me, also having investigated the role of diversity in fostering innovation, I also would like to highlight that the core idea is also that it is that this melting pot, right? And bringing in different perspectives and seeing how a lot could come out of it. And that we cannot achieve if we introduce this without at least thinking about the long-term consequences that this might have. So I think that's sort of the core areas what we touched upon in the op-ed. What do you think about that, Viviana?
I linger thinking about, you were mentioning the research that was behind this proposal, this policy proposal, right? Can you give us a bit more context on how this policy proposal came up, or like who did this? Was this a political movement? I don't know if this is politically correct to touch on a podcast, but
yeah.
But maybe could you give us a bit of context on this, or?
So at least, you know, this collecting school fees, I mean, for example, our Minister of Higher Education has said that the level is so high in Norwegian higher education that Norwegian universities and colleges are well equipped to recruit international students based on the quality of the offers. But here, like several others, we also in the academy, we think that this is a fundamental misunderstanding of how competitive Norwegian academia is in comparison to other countries. But I mean, the introduction of this is also to reduce costs, right? And that is something that has been a focal point of the university sector in the past few months, a lot of discussion about that. So, and that is also understandable to that you want to reduce costs, right? And that is something that we also could see that a need for to take a discussion about it. But that's where we believe that the focus point has been about reducing costs without thinking about the consequences and without thinking long-term consequences about this, what it holds, not only for higher education, but also for the society as a whole and for the industrial structures as a whole, to look about what does this actually entail? What would it mean? And like do some scenarios, thinking like an actual calculations to see what that would entail. So for us, it also feels a little rushed and without the necessary
research
thought
behind. Yeah,
but I mean, there could be things here that I've missed in sort of all the argumentations that lies behind such a proposal, right? But a part of it is about all this cutting cost in higher education.
Okay. What comes to my mind is that this needs to have these costs need to be understood in a different way, more as an investment into the Norwegian future, in Norwegian innovation. And, you know, I think you already mentioned these mega trends that are happening in the world, and no country is escaping from those, right? And definitely investing in internationalizing your human resources, because finally, at the end, your students will be your human resources, will be the human resources of your country, you know, is the best investment a country can now make, because there are many things coming, you know, regarding climate change, regarding the aging of the population, that need to have these different perspectives in order to be solved, or at least tackled, because I don't know if we will be able to ever solve them, because these problematics are huge. But definitely we need to start somewhere, and the best way to start is by bringing together, you know, the brightest minds from anywhere in the world. And as we mentioned as well before, not every bright mind from every country will be able to pay the living costs of Norway to begin with, which I think are even bigger than the tuition fees of universities, if I'm not wrong. You can correct me if I'm wrong. Regarding the potential of internationalization of Norwegian education, I think if someone will have, at the end, like thinking as a student, you know, like from a student perspective, if I'm gonna have to invest, I don't know how many thousands of dollars into going to Norway, and if I compare, maybe the labor market or the at the end, maybe the labor market or the returns on my investment will be faster and higher if I go to the US, maybe, I don't know, to Germany, you know, like I don't know how competitive is Norway as a country, as a destination, as a place to live, as a place to work, for in comparison to other countries that are maybe that right now like ask for a tuition fee and they cost. But, you know, if I'm going to have to make an investment, such a huge investment, okay, I go all the way and I go for, you know, the one country that I think will give me more returns, no? So I think I agree with you in that you just, maybe they are overestimating a bit. As well, it's maybe not because Norway is not good, but it's not marketed enough, you know? Like, I think regarding country marketing, there are countries that are more marketed or better marketed than others, definitely. And, you know, like Norway, because of its location, you know, it's up there cold and dark in the most of the year, might not be the best destination, you know.
Like, no, I think we have a way to go there. But what did you know about Norway?
So I have one of my best friends, actually one that graduated from my program, and the same program, the same master program that I did here in Europe, the one that I told you about, from 18 different nationalities. He's Mexican, and he's now working in AITI, which is an organization that aims to regulate the oil and gas industry sectors for trying to make them be more sustainable and green, kind of thing, you know. It's like an international standard for sustainability in the oil and gas sector. And well, the main comment he has always made is, oh my god, everything is so expensive here. in Oslo at the moment, and I think he pays for his apartment. It's a one room apartment studio. He pays around 2,000 euros or something like this. This is why the prices is the first thing that comes to my mind. But to be honest, like, I come from Peru, I have never heard any advertisement or anything that would lead me to go to study in Norway, for example.
No.
Maybe Latin America, because of, you know, geographical limitations, is not your main market. But I don't know if we are talking about like Asia or Africa. I think from what I've seen as well, you know, people tend to go to the more marketed countries, you know, like Germany or, you know, the States.
Absolutely, and it's also about this return of investments, right? Because it's here we speak a very strange language called Norwegian, right? And it's about going into the labor market afterwards.
Yes,
Could also
exactly.
That could also be something to think about, right? That if you go to an English-speaking country or to another country, for example, where a Spanish-speaking country or like something where you could also easily move to other places, that could also be something to think about. So that's also something that we touch upon here, that we do not believe exactly like you saw also when introduction of tuition fee in the Scandinavian countries in Sweden and Denmark, you could also see that it drops it dropped
okay.
to the students, right? And it's no, like, we don't think that it would be any different, maybe just even worse if when it comes to the Norwegian case, just for some of the reasons that you mentioned here, right? That there are also a lot of other options, so why should they come here, and what
yeah.
do we have to offer? And I do believe that we have built up some really good research environments that are able to compete, but that's not the case for all of them necessarily.
Yes.
And it's something also about getting that known across the world. But
yes.
Maybe we then need other strategies, right? So you mentioned also your research program that you did. Was that like a Erasmus Mundus or?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so
Yes,
like
it was
those
an
kind
Erasmus Mundus. Yes, it was an
yes.
Erasmus Mundus.
So those kind of schemes and thinking differently also how we rig it is something that I think we really need to think about in the future to attract great talents from all over the world as well. So there are other measures and ways to be able to do that as well, I believe.
I agree with you, definitely. And I think
Mm.
that these initiatives that come from education, from the education system and education sector have to be thought in collaboration with the other sectors, you know, for example, with the industry sector, with the labor market, with the, you know, policy making sector. So
yes.
If you want to, like, as an outsider perspective, right, someone who in the past was looking where to go for studying internationally, I think it would be really attractive if a university could offer the whole combo, you know, like, okay, you have this international experience, plus then after you graduate, you have, you know, this career path that we will support you in, you know, because I think at the end, as an ex-student, for an international student, for an international talent coming to a foreign country, the most challenging part is finding a job, what to do after the program has ended, right? Finding a job afterwards. So maybe this would be a way of enhancing the attractiveness of Norwegian education, right? If you could collaborate with these companies
yeah.
that are hiring international people or making facilities, making career pathways.
Yeah. Yeah, that is also something that is discussed a little bit also to as one possibility is to think about scholarships, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that maybe the industry could then if
yes,
they were would
for
be
high
interested
talented
to see,
people, you know, internships. Yes, I've had some years of experience in working for corporate, for the corporate world, especially in IT, IT and banking, and they have these programs of young trainees, young professionals, where they basically cover all the costs for everything for high skilled people. So I think definitely there's a area to explore there. And maybe this is something that the policymakers in Norway should be listening to. they can also move policies towards that path.
Yeah,
but
maybe that is something that we could, now I'm just thinking out loud, but maybe that is also a consequence a little bit of this potential introduction of the tuition fee, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is to think about other types of models like the one you just mentioned in order to tackle and still be able to bring in international students and international talents to think differently about other ways of doing so.
Let's write that down. Maybe we can
yes.
work about it.
Yeah.
Okay, Marta, it has been
yeah.
really lovely talking to you today, and it has been really lovely to meet you. We only met before through LinkedIn when I wrote you about this topic because I saw a LinkedIn post that you made that caught my attention. And just to close this interview, I would like to close with some remarks from your side about this topic. And how do you see, like, If this policy goes into functioning, how do you foresee the future of Norwegian universities and Norwegian higher education?
Oi, That's a big question.
Yes. We are
No,
allowed
I
to
think,
dream.
yeah, I'm allowed to dream. No, I think that at least that we will then experience some years that would be very different from what we have now. I mean, we will experience some years with fewer international students. And then, as we mentioned sort of in the last year, then we would have to rethink how we would work. So I think that there would need to bring together a lot of clever minds and think about how we would go about doing this, for example, by what you were talking about now, or the scholarships, and thinking about like how we could rig it differently. And I think that that will take a long time, and also something that we can see in the neighboring countries, where the introduction of the tuition fees, then they lost a lot of international students. I mean, almost, I don't remember the exact number, but I think more than 80%.
Okay.
So then, you know, it took close to 10 years to get back on the track. But I think that we would have a lot of work to do then in terms of marketing and how we would build the whole structure in order to make it interesting and stimulating to bring in international students, such as the program that you attended as well. But I do believe that there's a lot of young dynamic forces that are very positive and
Yes.
that would work together in order to continue to build an international academia, to work across borders, and to be able to potentially not solve, hopefully, but at least work to tackle the global challenges that we
Yes.
are faced with. And for that, we need knowledge across border and building
Yes.
education across border in order to tackle what we talked about, the climate crisis, the aging population, also the geopolitical tensions that we see. We need to go through, as also highlighted in the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals in
Goals,
number
yeah.
17, it's collaboration across border, right? And that is what we need moving forward. So when one door closes, another one opens. So
yeah, I agree. I
yeah.
agree. I definitely
Yeah.
agree. I've seen this over and over everywhere, in my life included.
Yes.
Okay, great, Marta. It has been great talking to you again. And let's keep in touch. Let's keep in touch for future interviews. We can talk about many topics here in the Innovation Higher
Yes.
Education podcast. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It's been great. And I think that we thank you for the opportunity. And indeed, I think we would have a lot of things to discuss. Next time, I could do it in Spanish.
Okay, great, great. Yeah, for the ones who don't know, Marta speaks Spanish perfectly. We were speaking Spanish in the backstage of the interview, but she was just too shy to speak.
Yeah, yes. I think that's a normal trait of me, being very shy. But I haven't, you know, I'm a bit, I feel a bit rusty. But actually, when we were talking together, it did work
It
out
was
more or less well.
supernatural.
But,
I was feeling
yeah.
you like a you were in Dominican Republic, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I was like I was talking to a native speaker. I don't know what she was shy
Yes.
about.
Yeah. Yeah. So
Okay.
no, but it's been great. So
okay, yeah,
yeah.
For me too. For me too. Okay, I will close this interview here. Then you can say, but before closing, I was forgetting something. For people who want to contact Marta about topics related to innovation in higher education or research in Norwegian universities, where can they do it? You can
Yep.
tell us.
Yeah, they can reach out to like we met on LinkedIn, so they can add me on LinkedIn, for example, maybe is easiest. I must say that the post about tuition fee has received a lot of attention, and
I think
it was fun. I
it's
mean,
a very hot topic. I think it's a topic that touches a lot of internal interests and, you know, feelings. It's an emotional topic, so
yeah. And I love that about LinkedIn, because you could see that also you suddenly see posts from other people that you are not necessarily in your network, but I think that it would so LinkedIn is one place to find me, and or you could send me an email. So yeah.
Okay, great, great, Marta. Then see you the next time.
Thank you for listening to the Innovation in Higher Education podcast. Follow us on LinkedIn and subscribe to our newsletter to not miss any episode. You can also find us on Instagram and TikTok as @innovationinhighered. Cheers!